Hello and welcome to another episode of the Autoblog Podcast. I'm Greg Migliori. Joining me today on the phones, we've got Road Test Editor Zach Palmer. How you doing, man?
I'm doing pretty good. How about you?
Not bad, not bad. And on the West Coast Editor James Ryswick. How you doing, man?
Just fine.
All righty, let's get into the show. We got a great one for you. I spent some time in the Acura NSX. Modern supercar. It got a lot of attention in my neighborhood. It was fun to run some errands and things like that. We'll get into a little bit more. And then we're going to dive quite deeply into the BMW 2 Series Grand Coupe, what you've all been waiting for, right? But we actually had James drove the 228 and Zach drove the M235. So this is an instance where the fleet's kind of lined up. We have some pretty comprehensive coverage here. So that should be good. Then James also spent some time. We'll touch briefly on the Miata, the RF with the cool top on it, and of course the Civic Si. We've got a couple of lists that you guys might have seen on the site from the 80s and the 70s, 1985 and 1975, which we'll just kind of briefly touch on those. It was a lot of fun to do. You guys were really engaged with them in the comments. We'll talk about that a little bit. Just some of our reasoning behind our picks. And then maybe we'll throw some stones at the other picks that our fellow colleagues made because they're not here to defend themselves. Let's put it that way. A little bit of the news. There's new Acura today, and the Woodward Dream Cruise appears to be canceled. So that's the show. Let's get right in. This last week, I've spent some time in the Acura NSX. This is an enjoyable car. I think it's striking. I drove the one that had the carbon fiber interior and exterior packages. So, you know, there's a lot of carbon fiber on it. Let's put it that way. This one was bright red, almost like a crimson, if you will. It looks, you know, obviously, I think the looks for this car have actually been, you know, agreeable in the fact that most people like it. Other supercars could get a little more divisive, but I think most people generally like the new NSX, and it was definitely fun to get attention and have people take pictures of it. And you know, while I'm cutting my grass, that's always kind of fun to see. So yeah, I mean, it passes that test for sure. How did it drive, you ask? Well, it was a lot of fun. It's I think, you know, the everyday supercar sort of trope, if you will, is, you know, applies to this thing. You can see out of it very well. It's, you know, a simple, intuitive interior. It reminds me a bit of when I drove a 91 NSX when I worked for Automobile. I did a retro drive for them. And I mean, I was super psyched to drive it. I got into it and then I kind of relaxed and was like, oh, this is what this is. It's a Honda, basically. I can do this. And that was sort of my like quick Saturday morning reaction once I got back into the NSX. I've driven a few of these, this modern generation before, and once you get in there, it feels right at home. It's simple, it's clean, again, intuitive, it's drivable, to use that kind of cliche. But you know, you can see out of it very well. It doesn't like rip your head off, if you will, like different versions of the I've not driven the C8 yet, but I drove all versions of the C6, C7. The Z06 is one in particular that would rip your head off, it would seem like. This car did not have that vibe. Controlled, poised. I was excited to drive it. I drove it at this time of the day when there was really nobody around. And I still ran into construction, so, you know, welcome to Michigan, right? But that actually had me kind of learn more about the car, because I spent some time on the surface streets, which were not in good shape. The construction hasn't, frankly, resumed on those. They need some potholes, let's put it that way. And in some supercars, some sports cars, you're going to need to visit your chiropractor after that. With the NSX, it's kind of a nice blend of tuning, sporty, but also, you know, it doesn't rip up your back. It doesn't really, you don't need to get your fillings adjusted, let's put it that way. So, and that's kind of like the 5-minute nutshell of my drive slash opening monologue, if you will. Zach, I want to bring you in because I know you've driven the new NSX. You have a long history with the NSX. You didn't get to drive this one, obviously. But, I mean, where would you put it in the ranks of the supercars right now?
Yeah, so like you said, I've had a lot of wheel time behind the original NSX. My dad owns a 1991, and I've had a surprisingly amount of wheel time behind this new one. I was actually at the first drive at the track last year, and then I also spent a weekend in a 2019 NSX driving it on the road, just like you did. And in both situations, it is super at home. You know, you can bring it to the racetrack, and you know, it is the most capable car I have ever driven on track, hands down. Now, I had not driven something like a McLaren 720S, or you know, like a Ferrari F8 Tributo or a Pista or things like that. But as far as you know, the sports car world, you know, you are hard pressed to find something that is this capable with all wheel drive that feels this great. And then on the road, yeah, like just like you said, Greg, it's a really great compromise between comfort and you know, it's a lot like a Honda inside, just like the original one was. You know, it's not crazy like a Lamborghini in there where you're going to have 18 billion different switches and you know, it's impossible to see out the back, and they, you know, it's you get in it, it's turnkey, and you know, I've seen a lot of criticism leveled at it for that. You know, it's people say, oh, it doesn't feel like a real supercar because of all these things, because it's, you know, it's simple, easy, you know, it's still a very, very special driving experience from that standpoint. And you know, the original, you know, was a totally different beast, just because a lot of the supercars at that time, they didn't have that, you know, reliability or, you know, ease of use approach to them. But at this point, you know, everybody else has caught up. So, like, you can get into a new McLaren 570 and it's going to be reliable. It's not going to be impossible to figure out. It's not going to leave you stranded on the side of the road. And so the Acura doesn't really have that in its corner anymore. But they're still, I think, you know, the whole NSX new sports car experience is still, you know, that ethos is still alive in it, because, you know, they tried to upend the world once, and this time they tried to upend the world by going with the hybrid powertrain, which really nobody except for the 918 had done that. And, you know, it really still, at this point, people have not, you know, completely gone to that fully, you know, hybrid supercar. You know, we see that McLaren has said that they're going to do it, but you know, we see the I believe the new Ferrari SF90 Stradale is also going to plug in hybrid, but you know, it's still rather unique out there, and you know, it's a cool option for around $156,000. Like you said, Greg, yours had the full carbon fiber exterior and interior on it. I know that those options bring it up into the around the $200,000 range, and at that price point, it is it's a hard bargain to sell, I feel, especially when the C8 is just as fast in a straight line and you can have it for $60,000. So I mean, it's a great car, but you know, it's tough to justify it at some price points now. So
yeah, this one's $202,995, which is,
yeah,
you know, I actually didn't really quite realize that until after I had driven it. I had the spec sheet here. It's like sort of, you know, I knew it, but I, you know, it didn't really filter through, if you will. But I mean, it's loaded up. It's got, you know, the carbon ceramic rotors. The calipers were silver, which looked pretty amazing. Carbon fiber roof. Carbon fiber, I mean, just like everything. It had the crazy carbon fiber deck lid spoiler. Not crazy. It was actually pretty tasteful, I think. Just carbon fiber everything. Valencia red pearl paint, which I was referencing earlier. That's where I would diverge this new NSX with the past one, with its predecessor, if you will. Because I thought that car had a really sort of understated design look that was cool. It was very 90s, let's put it that way. Like, you know, you could just, when you think of the 90s supercar, you know, the NSX to me is one of the top five, if you will, as far as like iconic silhouettes and images. This one really veers into the more like tech, like technical looking, technical feeling, you know, the grill, the lights, all these curves and chisels and things going on. It's a really like, there's just a lot going on with this design. And generally, I think it works, but you know, that definitely makes it different than what the old one was, that's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, and there's, I feel like it is certainly, you know, more sharp-edged and aggressive than the old one was, but I still think you line this up next to a Lamborghini Huracan or a Ferrari, and it does look more understated than those. It's still not, you know, to that level of aggression, both inside and outside.
Inside. Inside, it's like a Honda, basically. I mean, or a basic Acura, and I think that's a good thing. You know, having driven some of the McLarens and the Lambos and different Ferraris. You get in the Ferrari these days, and you're like, whew, what do I do? How does this all work sometimes? So I think simple is good. I think we've talked a lot about the Acura NSX. It was a lot of fun. It's, you know, let me put it this way. I have a Toyota Highlander and nobody's stopping and taking camera phone shots of that, which is okay, you know, but it's definitely fun to get a car like an NSX, a bright Valencia red one that people, you know, seem to stop and look at and take videos. And it's a little creepy when people are videoing things in your driveway, but it's fun, you know, and it's fun to drive a supercar. Let's put it that way. So we could leave it there. Let's move along to this like two series comparison test, if you will. Zach, why don't you kick things off? You were in the M235i. What'd you do with it? What'd you think of it? And then we could get James in.
Yeah, so I was in the new M235i Grand Coupe. It's called a Grand Coupe, but like every other BMW Grand Coupe, it is not a coupe. There are four doors. That's the most obvious difference, first off, with the regular 2 Series. Really, this 2 Series Grand Coupe could not be more different than the normal 2 Series that we know. It's a rear-wheel drive car. This one is based on a front-wheel drive architecture, but BMW only sells it in all-wheel drive. And it has, at least mine, has a 2-liter turbocharged 4-cylinder, makes 301 horsepower, 332 pound-feet of torque. And that is, you know, probably one of my favorite things about it, actually, is, you know, the engine is super, super strong. You know, you get to 60 in about 4.5 seconds, which, you know, for an entry-level car like this at its price point is not too bad. And, you know, it's a decent sound that comes from the exhaust. But, you know, the actual going forward is probably about where my opinion starts to diverge from the positive to the neutral and negative about this car. I know I've been chatting with James back and forth all week about the looks. To me, this is one of the just worst looking BMWs that have come out in a long time. You know, it's this sort of soft, curved, rounded off face that, you know, sort of looks bulbous. And yeah, I don't normally do this by like comparing a car, oh, it looks like this car or this car looks like that. But, you know, I cannot help but look at this car and just think Ford Focus. You know, the shape, the front end, the way the lines go back to the rear, there's just a lot of Ford Focus face to it. And then when you come around to the back, if you like the X6, you'll probably like what this car looks like in person, because it sort of just looks like a BMW X6 that's been squished down and, you know, all compressed, which is sort of weird because it's like a crossovery rear on a sedan shape. So that was definitely a bit weird to see. It comes off the same in photos as it does in person to me. Sometimes a car will look a lot worse in photos than it actually does in person, but this one, I just really, really wasn't vibing with it. The saving grace for me, it had these 19-inch bi-color wheels on it that, you know, were very not Ford Focus like. Those looked luxurious, performance oriented, and pretty aggressive actually. But you know, when you get to the handling portion of it, technically, you know, there's a ton of grip, and I think that, you know, it's a solid handling car. Now, That said, I didn't find it that fun to actually drive and push through corners. It handles a lot like the BMW X2, which is a, you know, small hatchified crossover, which just doesn't really hit the mark for me when you're talking about a small BMW performance car. You look at how great the M240i is. That is a really great small BMW right there. And frankly, I mean, the 3 Series is a more fun car to drive than this one, just like the base one. If you get the, especially with the track handling pack, you get the big brakes, adaptive suspension. But this car, you know, it's all-wheel drive. You can feel that the BMW has done a pretty good job of making it not feel like a front-wheel drive car. So it feels all-wheel drive. It's neutral in corners. It doesn't, you know, just start understeering when you put the throttle down. But it's not fun as in, like, not a lot of power is going to the back. It's just enough power that it sort of keeps you in a straight line around corners. But it does have a lot of the things that I think, you know, somebody in this segment will like, which James actually mentioned to me, and I'll pull him in on this now since he had the 228i, which is the slightly less powerful version of my car with a few less things on it. But yeah, go ahead, James.
Right. So this, the 2 Series, yeah, I have the 228i and also 4-cylinder turbo, 228 horsepower, 258 pound-feet of torque. Pretty standard amount of power for that size of engine in the segment. I found that this drives more like a BMW in feel than, say, the Mercedes A-Class and CLA feel like Mercedes. Specifically because of the powertrain, just the throttle response, the transmission, it's in keeping. You can go from a 2 Series to a 3 Series and feel, yep, they're made by the same company. Broadly speaking, though, I do agree with Zach. The Ford Focus thing, I noticed that the second I saw this car. I knew it was coming. Someone was dropping it off at my house, and because of the way things are working now, they just drop it off, leave the keys in. I came down 10 minutes later and thought someone had parked a Ford Focus across the street. They hadn't. It was the 2 Series, and Zach's car's white. That's even worse.
Yeah.
Part of it has, it's entirely in the C pillar at the back, which does not have the BMW Hofmeister kink, and it's those curved rear fenders. And this thing, it's not, but it looks badge engineered. It looks like there's a Buick and a Pontiac version you can also buy. Just a BMW front and rear end slapped onto some generic looking thing. And it's ugly too. That's the other thing. This is Bangle era 2, except it's done by a man named Domagoj. Not really. This is, Zach's absolutely right. And the other thing, you mentioned that it drives like an X2. I agree. I thought the X2, when I drove that, felt a bit like a BMW hot hatch, albeit one that's a little taller and kind of cross-trekked. This also kind of drives like a BMW hot hatch, but it's lower, and as such, is just that much sharper to drive. So I think there's certainly some comparisons to be made, at least with this 228i to a Volkswagen Golf R, for instance. The Golf R is a lot quicker than this 228 for roughly the same price. It has a smarter all-wheel drive system. You can get it with a manual transmission. So maybe you should get the Golf R. Either way, the other thing about this is price, because this is the price gap between a Mercedes A-Class and C-Class is more than $8,000. The difference between the 228i Grand Coupe and the 330i is only $3,000. That is not a very big gap. That's like $50 a month. And it's just, it's a less, yes, it's less powerful, and yes, it's a bit smaller, and you can't get the same latest BMW tech in it, but it should be more than $3,000. And I'm sure a BMW marketer out there will go, but wait, it's a Grand Coupe. Coupes are worth more, and it looks interesting. Yeah, no, it isn't. Mercedes didn't try that with the A-Class, and with the CLA can do that, because I'd argue the CLA does look pretty cool, and it is very sleek, and that said, it's still, there's a bigger gap between CLA to C-Class. So, from every perspective, just the fact that, yes, it does drive like a BMW, but everything else is just kind of disappointing, and it's either not good enough for the price, or not distinctive enough for the price, or just there's just not enough of a gap to between it and the 3 Series.
I'm not a big fan of the entire Grand Coupe concept. I feel like that's been something that BMW rolled out. I mean, they rolled it out roughly 6-7-ish years ago. And the way they execute the cars, it's a very watered down experience, I think. I think it works maybe in the larger cars. It starts to work a little bit better, but a 2 Series Grand Coupe, yeah, I don't know about that. That's kind of a questionable strategy.
But yeah, and the...
Oh, it's pure marketing. It's pure marketing.
The back...
Because it... Yeah.
The back seat really isn't that utilitarian either. Like, if I sit back there with my back straight, my head is resting on the ceiling. You know, it's not as though, like... And I'm not even 6 foot. I'm 5'10". And, you know, there's an okay amount of room for knees, but still. I mean, I would not want to spend like a whole lot of time back there. And that's like the one of the big selling points versus a regular 2 Series is you have those two rear doors. I will take a regular 228i or an M240i with the inline six, which 335 horsepower. Yeah, that's much more like it. Rear wheel drive, you know. But, you know, two doors versus four doors. That's that's what you're stuck with there.
Cool. So let's move on to the rest of the West Coast fleet. James, the Miata and the Civic Si. Why don't you touch on the Miata first?
All right. Speaking of cars, I did not like. So it's a Miata, right? We're Autoblog.
Sounds good.
Miatas.
Yeah,
all
man.
Automotive journalists. All automotive journalists like Miatas. They're great. Except for this one had an automatic transmission. Cue the sad
Ooh.
Trombone.
That's a little bit of a unicorn.
So, yeah, I know. So let's talk about automatic transmissions. Now, generally, I'm a save the manuals kind of guy. If I just mentioned that the two Grand Coupe, you can't get a manual, that's sad. But here's the thing with the automatic in the Miata. It's not very good. I mean, it would be fine in any number of other cars, but it's not a performance-oriented automatic. It's just not quick enough to respond both to your manual inputs as well as to just smart enough to work on its own devices. It's not a dual, it's just a 6-speed automatic transmission. And this is not even like a number of gears situation because that's the case in all of Mazda's cars and they still manage to perform very well and get great fuel economy. This, just for a performance-oriented machine, it is just not appropriate. And it just kind of sucks the life out of the engine. Both in terms of the actual performance and the way it sounds. The other thing about this one, it's the RF. Now, I don't really like this roof. It adds complexity and weight, and it maybe reduces headroom by a centimeter, which doesn't seem like a lot, but when you have virtually none to begin with, it does make quite a difference, and my head is now in that roof. I kind of feel like Sean Connery in You Only Live Twice, where they had to, like, chop the roof off the Toyota 2000 GT so his big Scottish head could, like, fit above the headliner. Kind of like that with the Miata. The thing is that, especially with the automatic, but both elements, is that they just kind of rob the fun out of the car a bit. And, add unnecessary complexity to a car that doesn't need it. Because the thing is just so much fun. Even when you just put it in drive, you feel that throttle response, which is still so good, and it just makes the car just want to jump forward, and you immediately just want to do silly, fun things in it. More so than virtually any other car on the road.
How else was yours spec'd out? I'm curious. If they gave you an automatic, like, what else was on this car? Like a cow catcher or something? I mean, that's...
Yeah. Well, the other thing about this is, so it's with the automatic, it's the club. Okay, so let's go back. It's the club trim of the Miata. So this would be the one that is the most performance oriented one. However, with the automatic, there's a whole bunch of stuff you cannot get on the car. You can't get the Bilstein dampers. You can't get, there's a front shock tower brace that's on the club and a limited slip differential. You cannot get those with the automatic transmission. Dan Edmonds goes into why in his suspension deep dive, by the way. There's also not the induction sound enhancer, which is not like speakers, but is kind of like an induction tube thing. And you also can't equip it with the optional Brembo brakes. So it's a club, basically an appearance only, and it has an automatic transmission. So just, again, sad trombone.
Was the Civic Si any better?
Yes, it was much better. Civic Si is much, much better performance buy than a Miata automatic RF. Really enjoyed the Civic Si. You know, it's showing its age a bit in terms of its interior, especially. This is mostly because of everything that it competes with. Obviously, there is no comparable performance version of the Mazda 3, but in terms of its interior quality, even like the Toyota Corolla now. But because this is an SI, it doesn't really have that same kind of competitive set in order to complain about interior quality. They spruced up the interior with some red accents, and if you think that's garish, wait until you see a Type R. But for a front-wheel drive car, the Civic Si is so much fun, and it does have a manual transmission, and not only does it have one, it is absolutely standard, and you can't get it with an automatic. So, bravo to Honda. Perhaps it doesn't come with an automatic because Honda didn't have one that they thought was appropriate enough for a performance-oriented vehicle like the Civic Si, and they were smart about that.
Very good, very good. Boy, we kind of started and ended the review section with a monologue by me and then a monologue by James. And in between, we sort of let Zach talk for a little bit about a BMW. So, I guess why don't we move along to the list section? We had a lot of fun with this. We have another one coming up. But the last couple of weeks, we've picked cars we would have driven from the middle of the decades of the 80s and the 70s. So that's a long way of saying, what car would you drive in 1975 or 1985? James, you were kind of the ringleader of these two lists. And we do have 65 coming up shortly. I need to get my entry. It may be coming over later. So I'm just going to forewarn you now and everybody else listening to this. But I don't know. What was the idea behind this, first of all, James? Just tell everybody why we did this. Super bored. Like the car world's shut down.
I'll keep this brief, but I was normally while working out in the evening, I watch like a sporting event, but since there's no new sporting events, I've gone back in time. So I was watching a baseball game from 1985, and the person who YouTubed this kept some commercials in from the NBC affiliate in Fargo, North Dakota. That's very fun. Yeah, but there was a Ford Tempo commercial, brand new Ford Tempo commercial with a great deal of 8.8% financing. Ooh, wow. 1985. Yeah. Sign me up. and, you know, there was like Carl Yastrzemski for Chevy trucks. And so that just got me thinking, if I was suddenly found myself in 1985, what car would I buy? Price point, let's keep it reasonable. I'm not going to, like, I can't buy a Lamborghini today. I couldn't buy a Lamborghini back then. So, yeah. So I just thought, what would you drive in 1985? I picked a 1985 Saab 900 turbo with the three-door because, I don't know, just kind of wanted something European, and the BMW 3 Series wasn't, you know, that distinctive then. Thought I'd just be weird and go with the Saab.
Even though the lead image is an IROC Camaro with you in a Foreigner t-shirt, so,
yeah,
which is great. I was more of a journeyman myself, but, you know, hey. Which car did you pick? Go ahead.
No, I was going to say that photo that is used is from the photo shoot of the 1987 Buick Grand National photo shoot I did when I worked at Edmunds.
Okay.
Wow.
We kind of did a 1980s themed photo shoot for the long-term introduction, kind of made it look like an 80s like ad campaign. It's pretty epic. Sadly, they've removed the photo since then. So,
well, I'm curious.
That photo is just one I took in the break room with my own camera. And
did you Photoshop the hair though, or are you?
No. That is a Hollywood quality human hair wig that like a real wig maker for Hollywood made for us and cut it into a mullet. I have it to this day. I could have, and the shirt. Shirt's behind me right now in the garage. I could retake that photo for you in 10 minutes if you wanted. Please don't make
that is my favorite part of this article now. I didn't know that. I thought that was just creative Photoshop. I'm so glad to hear that's true.
Me's real.
Give me another few weeks and coronavirus quarantine, and my hair is not going to be far off from that. Maybe not quite that long, but it's that tall at the moment. Let's put it that way. Man, the 80s were an interesting time. This is a fun list. I mean, Byron Herd threw in there a Mustang SVO. We got a Grand Cherokee from Jeremy, who, of course, likes to, you know, steer towards Jeeps. Joel threw in a Honda. Or no, he threw in a Toyota. That's great. I mean, check out the list. It's better than me reading it. But it's, you know, if you're at home, check these lists out. They're cool. Zach, as somebody who wasn't born in the 80s, I'm curious how you approached your decision here.
So I've always loved the Scirocco, which is one that I picked. I definitely like the first-gen Scirocco more than the second-gen. I mean, the first thing on my mind, I know James was actually sharing the 10 best list from Car and Driver at that time, which is full of some really great cars, full of some Hondas too. I have plenty of history with Honda. So I was like, all right, Prelude, maybe the Civic, but, I'd love a European coupe. I love the shape of the Scirocco. I was pretty sad that I couldn't get the 16 valve, which was 86, but, the original press photo that came with this one was probably the final nail in the coffin. I just love that slanted back look. And yeah, no, I mean, everybody chose coupes, which I thought was pretty awesome. Like almost every single one of us chose
almost coupes. Everybody.
Yeah, and almost.
What is the opposite of the Scirocco?
Yeah, Grandpa.
A 1985 Oldsmobile Delta 88, which has literally no curves or angles. It's one big barge of a battleship, an Iowa class battleship on wheels. When you're gonna do these lists, you gotta have some fun. You know, for James, that means rocking a Foreigner t-shirt and a mullet, and for me, that's like, let's pull out the Rocket 88 Olds. And I don't know, I kind of like that car.
You know, I'm pretty sure that my grandfather owned an Oldsmobile Delta 88 in 1985.
Nice.
And the one you picked is more of a grandpa car than that one.
Yeah,
was.
Yeah. Check out those wheel
covers.
He had the
coupe. Yeah. That car, man alive. Well, I think the car I was taken home from the hospital in was a Buick LeSabre.
Oof.
From like 81 or something, and it's the same damn car, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah.
I
think the reason I actually like this car, I mean, I like this car for so many different reasons. How can you not like this car? You're crazy if you don't. But when I was a kid, I want to say sometime in this is somewhere in the 80s, one of those like early to mid 80s Oldsmobiles, it was a Delta 88, we had as a loaner. I don't know why. I think it was because my parents' 73 Chevelle was in for who knows what the problem was. And I just love this Oldsmobile. And I was a little kid and probably was in a car seat, although who even knows at that point if you bothered to put a car seat in a loaner car. And this must have been probably the late 80s at this point. But I like that old Reagan-era Oldsmobile. So why don't we flash back and...
Well, actually...
Go ahead, James.
Speaking of which...
I'm starting to sound like a DJ here.
Yeah, the Le Sabre in my family was replaced by an 83 Cutlass Sierra.
Ooh.
So we too were Oldsmobile people, but we had downsized to something.
Something more sensible.
A little smaller.
In keeping with the times.
More manageable, yeah. Yeah, my mother ended up with that car and then got rid of it and got an Integra and never looked back.
We sound pretty old. I mean, it's 3:30 Eastern time. Dinner is coming up soon, maybe at the Sizzler. We could make the, you know, whatever.
Great, let's talk about 1975.
Yeah, let's flash back even farther. I sound like a DJ here.
Well, the great thing about the 75 one, and speaking of Oldsmobile, was I ended up finding, you know, like old, you know, advertisements for cars. And the 1975 Oldsmobile ad collection is really special. You have, you know, it's these lifestyle things where you have, like, this cowboy parked in a field with his bright red Toronado where his cowboy friends and cows are around. Like, why is this car there? Did he park it there? Was it abandoned? Like, why? Just the questions that you have about how these cars ended up where they were. You know, the family of eight parked with their custom cruiser, again, in a field next to their farm. Yeah, if you want to have fun on the internet, look up old car ads and brochures from the 70s, because it is just, it's a wonderful time to, just a wonderful way to spend time, or waste it, either way. The Pontiac ones were good. They're all in, like, a dark alley.
I would just say this, public relations and advertising sounds like it was a very different thing. Obviously, we've all seen Mad Men, but, you know, some of the PR people I've worked with who, you know, been around a little bit longer, you know, they tell stories about the 70s, and you can kind of see where these pictures came from, let's put it that way, that the mindset and the, yeah, I mean, like this one on top, the lead image, like, doesn't that look like Ralph Lauren? Like, what's even going on there? Like, it's... I don't even know.
Yeah, Toronado in a field with cowboys.
Yeah, I mean, why not? And the Pontiac one, like you said, is hilarious. Like, let's park your Pontiacs in the middle of nowhere in a dark alley, but, like, then shine spotlights on them? I don't know. It's...
You know what? Like, so I'm looking at this, and it kind of looks like it's a garage, and it looks like it's supposed to be, like, a race car in a garage, like a garage that's open, except it's clearly just a photo of a race car in a garage that they've, like, projected or something behind the photo. Bravo the 70s.
Yeah, it reminds me of when I try to, like, take, like, a fancy picture, like, but I don't really have the time to do it, and I just do it on my phone and, like, for a tweet or something. And I, like, turn the flash way up and, like, oh, this is gonna look cool, like a magazine cover. But they actually did it that way in 1975.
Oh, and speaking again, your picture, Grandpa, there is another Oldsmobile. This time of a middle-aged couple in front of their Royal Viking cruise liner.
Yeah,
they've just parked their car right on the dock, ready to go.
Yeah, I don't know where they're like taking that.
Like at the cargo level too. Like, are they taking it with them?
Maybe they are. Looks like they're heading back to Oslo, and there you go. I actually really think the 75 Cutlass held up. This is really qualifying it among the best of some of those, like, you know, oil price, you know, issues, like fuel economy, strangled GM, like muscle air quote cars at that point. I think it still looked pretty good compared to, like, the way the Chevelle kind of devolved and some of the other ones. Even though I will argue, I think the 73 Chevelle still looks pretty good. But that's my rabbit hole. Zach, you actually had some taste for your pick.
Yeah.
You want to explain? And you briefly owned part of one, it sounds like.
I did, actually. Yeah. So I chose a 914. And yeah, I I think I have to say that my photo is the most stylish of all of them.
I wouldn't disagree with that.
A green 914, just looking very, very pretty in Europe somewhere, most likely. But yeah, like you said, Greg, I owned a 914 for a very short period of time. My original plan with it was I was going to restore it. It was going to be my first car. I was going to drive it through high school. And yeah, I really had no other plans than just, you know, fixing up this old car that I really bought for nothing because it had no engine, no transmission, not much of an interior or anything. I smarted up, sold that thing, and bought an Acura Integra. Maybe you think it was the wrong choice, but it was definitely better for me to have when I was 16 years old as my first car. But yeah, you know, if I was in 1975, I would absolutely be driving a mid-engine Porsche with, you know, a T-top, and you know, power wasn't that great back then. So screw it, it's the four-cylinder, and just having some fun with the top down. Obviously very different from your Oldsmobiles, Greg.
And it's funny because, like, there's different ways to approach this job. Some things are super serious and some things are like whimsical. Let's make this up and throw a dart. And for whatever reason, on those two, whatever it was, Tuesday, Wednesday nights, I'm thinking Oldsmobile. And I, like, literally, if you asked me today, probably would pick something different. But I still stand behind those picks. So,
I'm with you, man. I like Oldsmobiles. Yeah. I always have. Maybe it's because it's gone now, and there's kind of like you fondly remember them. But nevertheless, I thought they were kind of. I like their vibe. Like, just generally like the Oldsmobile vibe.
Snyder took my Cutlass, the one I wanted in the 80s. So, you know, that had to throw me into the Delta 88 realm, which is okay.
If we ever go way back in time, like into the 20s, James, you're going to have to get a great Gatsby get-up or something like that.
Yes.
For the photo.
Yeah.
You know, now, for some real old-timey stuff.
As our New Year's Eve party this year was Great Gatsby New Year's, that's going to be easy.
You're set. Looks like we should be doing 1925.
1925.
Well, as we all like trot out cars that look exactly the same.
What's your favorite post-war car? As in post-World War One car.
Post-World War One. Uh-huh.
I'm just going to say right now, we eliminate the Just Be Reasonable Man because I'm picking a Pierce Arrow.
I'm driving a Duesenberg.
Yeah, I was just about to say Duesenberg. Yeah, we can all fight over which Duesenberg we want.
Yeah. Because otherwise, you're just going to pick like a black Model T or a black Chevy that looks like the same. Like, either you just do that or, like, yeah, I'm rolling in the purple Rolls Royce.
Maybe a Delahaye. That sounds pretty fun.
A Delahaye or a Voisin, if I could get that out. French car that I believe built engines for the French Army, Army Air Corps, and then made cars. So, hey, if you want to go into some deep cuts, we could do it. Also, if you're listening to this, and we're a little well into the podcast, we hope you listened to it all the way through. If you don't, that's fine. But, hey, leave us a comment if you're curious. If you think we should go as far back to 1925, because I think we just want to do it, but I'd kind of like to know if people would actually read the story. So if you're strongly in favor of us rocking cars from 95 years ago, let us know in the comments. Or just tweet it, James. That's fine, too. Yeah, those lists were fun. 65 is going to be fun, too. I mean, if you think the 70s were great, I can only imagine how the 60s were, 20s, you know, the roaring 20s.
One of the thing with the 60s is we're going to have much, much, much better cars, but the art will be less interesting.
That's true. That's true. All right. So let's just touch on some briefly on some news here as we get out the door. Acura TLX is back. Well, it's here. Let's put it that way. We're getting this teased out. There's going to be more details coming up in the coming days. Let's put it that way. Revives the Type S moniker, and it gets Acura's turbocharged V6, which that really, to me, is a very key element here. I think that's a great thing. I'm excited about this engine. Check out the story. Associate editor Byron Hurd compiled the sort of the preview, if you will, this morning. Again, embargo is going to be full embargo is next week, but this is a decent look as far as teaser shots go. My first thought was this looks like an alpha, like the Julia, when I saw it hit my inbox, but I think that's a good thing. Zach, why don't we throw it over to you real quick, because I know your pedigree in Acuras goes back deeply. How are you feeling about this?
I am really, really excited for the return of performance Acuras that are at an attainable price point other than the NSX. This is kind of how, you know, Acura did it back in the day, you know, that they came out with the NSX, the Halo car, and then a whole lot of really awesome performance Hondas and Acuras followed. You had some great Integras, really great Preludes, mini Civics, you know, the Legend was fantastic. That was actually before the NSX. But yeah, I mean, if for whatever reason, you know, we see the same thing, Acura has the NSX, you know, the reborn NSX, and now we're seeing Acura performance cars have a revitalization themselves, I am going to be really excited. This 3-liter twin turbo V6 that is going to be in the Type S is probably going to be fantastic. You know, I'm guessing, you know, high 300s, if not 400 horsepower from that thing. Probably won't have a manual. That's just the way of the world these days. But maybe the non-Type S TLX with the 2-liter turbo, maybe. You know, there's a manual transmission in the Accord with that 2-liter turbo right now, so they might pull a Genesis G70 and throw the manual on the lower spec version. But who really knows at this point? But yeah, super excited for, you know, a somewhat affordable performance Acura car.
Yeah, I think that's going to do a lot for their brand. I think it's going to really maybe help them reconnect with a new type of customer. I think this reminds me a little bit of what they tried to do with the ILX, which really didn't do much of anything for them. So I think, you know, this could maybe be more of a, you know, more of a holistic and impressive effort. So we'll see. Again, I'm fired up about this engine. I think it's it could really be the right thing to kind of like play to their base, and I guess we'll see. So, yeah, James, any thoughts on this?
I think the car needs to look fantastic.
Yeah.
If it doesn't, then who cares? No one will ever notice. It really comes down to that, because the last time the TL and 09 utterly torpedoed Acura for a decade.
Yeah.
The Acura TL was the best-selling luxury car, period. And 09 happened and done. This car, in order for it to be, you know, we can love a turbocharged V6 all we want, and it could be really great, but unless the car looks good and makes people go, what's that? Who aren't impressed by turbocharged V6s, then it'll be utterly irrelevant. Because right now, Acura, you know, they have their RDX and the MDX. They're very, you know, they're pretty sensible for a luxury vehicle, and that's why people buy them. Largely the same people the large subset of people who bought Acuras since the very beginning, because it's a more sensible purchase of a luxury car with a higher degree of refinement than you would get in a Honda. And then for a while, you know, turn of the century, the second generation TL, the third generation TL, which was wedgie and legitimately looked good to this day, the TLX at the same time. There were reasons to desire those cars for people beyond just either performance-oriented folks or the sensible shoes people. But that has not been the case anymore, and it's really kind of, what is Acura? There's not a lot of brand identity there. You know, they've come up with this this more performance-oriented slogan, yada yada, but a slogan does only so much. This will be the first car to show, you know, the fully formed and realized new Acura. And will it look good enough? And will the actual performance-oriented nature be good enough? We'll just have to wait to see, because I think this is kind of a make-or-break moment for Acura. If this car isn't good enough and it isn't a isn't as successful as it can be, you wonder why they even bother. Because the luxury game is so crowded now and is so legitimately tough. In order for you to stand out, you have to, well, stand out. Acura isn't doing that right now, and this car is going to determine whether it can in the future.
Well said.
I think that if it looks like the Type S concept that we saw a while back, that it's going to be a hit. That is one of my favorite looking concepts that I've seen in a long time. That extremely blue sedan that they showed. I saw it in person at the Chicago Auto Show earlier this year and just was blown away by how good this sedan looks. And hopefully that translates to production, because they have said that this is the design language that we're using for the new TLX. So fingers crossed on that one.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll tie up the show here with news that it sounds like the Woodward Dream Cruise, which for some of you, it's a big deal. For some of you, maybe not so much, but it's, you know, it bills itself as one of the largest single day car events in the world. Generally draws upwards of 1 million, sometimes 2 million people to Woodward Avenue. It appears to be the latest sort of cancellation due to the coronavirus. If you look at our headline or you look at our story, we're saying it's probably likely canceled. So we'll see. I mean, honestly, I think what could happen is people are still going to cruise. People are cruising. I have, actually, I go to this like sort of juicery off of Woodward, and I was over there a couple weeks ago, and you saw a lot of people. The weather was getting nicer. People were still out there with their cars. It's just kind of a, you know, a Michigan tradition, if you will. But I'll be interested to see how this plays out. The news of the day is two of the communities along Woodward have sort of voted to say, hey, you can't do this, which is entirely logical. You know, we don't really know how this pandemic's going to look in late August. But you still probably don't want 1 million-plus people in close quarters at that point. But on the other hand, you could theoretically drive your car safely up and down the street. You might not want to keep your windows open if you're bumper to bumper with like a couple hundred thousand other people. But I don't know. Zach, I know you didn't write the story, but you know, you've been to Woodward a lot. What do you think? You think this is going to happen? You think it's going to happen in some form?
You know? So the way that I pretty much see this playing out is, you know, there is not going to be an organized part of this event. You know, normally you have GM, Ford, FCA. Everybody has giant displays. There's grandstands everywhere. There's tents all the way up and down Woodward. There's just a lot of people gathering. All the restaurants are open. You know, you could hang out at, you know, there's this one giant pub that, you know, everybody hangs out at and watches the cars. But it's probably not going to be like that. It's probably just going to be, you know, people are still going to come out and cruise. I have no doubt of that. You know, there will still be thousands upon thousands of muscle cars, performance cars, but not even road legal cars, everything that come out. But yeah, you just won't have Chevy there with a display with the new C8, or you won't have Ford with Mustang Alley. And people, I guarantee that people will still set up their lawn chairs on the side to watch them go by. You know, hopefully everybody is responsible, you know, keeping their distance, because I could totally see that being somewhat of an issue with law enforcement. Just, you know, so long as people are keeping safe, keeping to their cars, it's going to unofficially happen, really. I know the organizers haven't actually come out and said, hey, it's off, it's canceled, but Woodward's a public road. People are going to cruise. Like you said, they're already cruising. I was there, I think, last Saturday night. Just wanted to see what it looked like. And yeah, cars everywhere already. And it's May, and the Dream Cruise is in August. So we have a long summer ahead of us here.
Yeah, I think, honestly, it probably is going to... Part of me cynically is wondering if these like local cities are maybe using this as an opportunity to say, man, this overruns our downtown. Let's like try and close off the crowds, and this is our out. I don't know. Maybe that's too cynical, considering how much money it pumps into the local economy.
Yeah,
you know, I don't think you'd want to shut your literally the tap off for that kind of revenue. Theoretically, you could do this as a little bit of a virtual event, like let the cars still show up, but keep the crowds away. I don't know how you do that. My guess, fingers crossed, is Michigan's restrictions are going to be basically wide open unless we get hit like some with some sort of early second wave. People aren't really predicting that for August. If something like that were to happen, people are like, well, it's probably more like flu season. You know, like you said, Zach, good luck with social distancing, though. That's where I think this gets tricky, is the crowd control. So,
yeah.
So we'll see.
Yep.
All right. And that's, I think that's it for this week of the show. Any final thoughts? You guys holding up well during your various lockdowns? At least you're driving BMWs.
Yeah, no, I'm good. I'm actually in our long-term S60 T8 this week. It's plugged in right outside. So
nice.
Excited to do a little electric motoring this week.
Sounds fun. James?
Yeah, and I was supposed to be in Osaka, Japan right now on vacation. So, you know, it's a little disappointing, but I'll just have to, you know, soothe myself with that ugly BMW out front and the Mercedes GLS 63 that will be replacing it. So, you know,
okay.
It's a nice dose.
My life's not that bad.
Like 617 horsepower. That's not too bad. Something like that.
Just all of the horsepower.
Yeah.
All right. Good times. Well, everybody be safe out there, and we'll see you next week.